Hello there, you're listening to The Box Office Show. I'm Ryan Hill.
And I'm Dylan Johnson. Today we're going to be talking about the box office numbers from last weekend and our box office predictions for this upcoming weekend.
We'll also be doing another grab bag, this time for the month of March. And between the latest entry in the Walking Dead franchise, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss's return to television with the Three-Body Problem adaptation, and Hulu's prestige period piece on the Shogun struggles of the 17th century, I will crown the winner of the spring TV season, based on only seeing the pilot episodes of all these three shows.
And I will be talking about a few old movies.
Let's first go to some news. Margot Robbie, hot off the success of the Barbie film, she's now adapting The Sims. She will not be starring. It seems like she'll just be producing, but an interesting cross-section of like video game adaptations and then adapting old, like well-established brands. Kate Herron of Loki, directing, and I believe showrunning the whole first season of that. She'll be co-directing and, well, co-writing and directing The Sims adaptation. Dylan, you ever play The Sims?
I did a little bit, yeah. Not a lot, but a little
Which
bit.
Which version? Sims 3? Sims
2? I don't know. I couldn't fucking tell you.
Okay. Probably Sims 3, I would guess. All right, let's now talk about some trailers. We're going to have some trailer talk. There's a lot that has been coming out recently. So first, let's just do a check-in, Dylan, on your trailer game lately. Have you seen Alien Romulus trailer?
Nope.
Have you seen the Penguin trailer?
Yup.
Oh, nice. Have you seen the Kinds of Kindness trailer? Yorgos Lanthimos and Emma Stone once again.
No, because I didn't know it had been dropped until just this moment. And I'm looking at it on my phone and I want to watch it so bad and I can't watch it until after we finish recording. So let's hurry this up so I can watch that trailer.
And then Bad Boys Ride or Die.
Nope.
I'll be honest, I have not seen that one. I meant to watch it at some point when I put it on here because I saw it had dropped. Of course, being the return of Will Smith since The Slap.
Whoa.
But yeah, I did not see that. It's also funny. This is the fourth. It's Bad Boys 4, but they already did Bad Boys for Life, so they couldn't use that. So now they just have Bad Boys Ride or Die.
They're so dumb. That would have been so good. Bad Boys for Life. Oh, my God. Fucking idiots. Anyway, how about that Penguin trailer?
Opportunity. Dude. It's right. Good. I like that they showed what you're getting with the trailer should do. It shows exactly what the tone is going to be because half that trailer is just the Penguin giving a monologue. And then it obviously ramps up at the end of, you know, cross-cutting and having guns firing and cars driving and all that. But it looks like it's just going to be a straight up mobster flick as a series and with the Penguin at the center of it.
I dig it.
And I'm game. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. And it didn't reveal too much about the plot, if anything about the plot, which I also like about trailers.
Very true.
When trailers tell me everything that's going to happen.
Yeah, it is not good. Kinds of Kindness also tells you nothing, but a lot of very interesting images in there. I'll be watching. I'll be excited for it.
I can't wait.
Alien Romulus, which that one, that's trying to get back to the roots. 1979 type alien right there. Like really? A straight up claustrophobic horror sci-fi.
It looked cool.
So it did. It looked good. Right. Looked well made.
I'll watch that trailer then.
So yeah, we'll definitely have to carve out an episode for that later in the year and bring on Sean Tormey, noted alien fanatic. So,
oh, that'd be nice. I haven't talked to Sean since the Halloween episode.
Well, we'll get him back on for the pod. But all right, let's jump into the box office breakdown for March 22nd to the 24th. Leading the pack in its debut, Ghostbusters, The Frozen Empire, with $45 million.
Just a little bit over Afterlife.
Squeaked above, Afterlife. So yeah, not
disappointing.
Great. Not great, considering one came out still in the pandemic season, and this one is not. But at least it didn't embarrass itself by being underneath the original, you know, the Afterlife Ghostbusters. So we'll see how it holds up in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, and following that was Dune Part 2 with $17.6 million, bringing its worldwide total to $550 million. Ryan, suck my dick.
How dare you?
You're getting fucked right now.
It's gonna pass the 650 mark, I think. That again, Jesus came out in November. Easily. And it was on my roster like it should have been. You would have been defeated, which would have been the greatest comeback known to man. And yet, I can't have that. And now I can't even have any of Dune's success on my side for the roster because you took it. You vile,
sucks to be you.
Disgusting thief. So, props to you. Great job. So, I'm happy for you. So happy. Kung Fu Panda 4, also on your roster, with 16.5 million. Over 260 million worldwide.
That's pretty
also
good.
Also doing really well for itself.
Yeah.
As your fifth pick. That's great. I'm so happy for you, Dylan. That's great. So happy.
Yeah, two of my lower picks still doing really, really good so far. Wow. Eat my ass.
Jesus.
After Kung Fu Panda 4 was Immaculate, which is the Sydney Sweeney horror movie. Yes?
It is.
Yes, yeah. With 5.3 million.
Which is not great. I don't know what the budget is on that. Maybe it'll make back its money, but you would have thought Sydney Sweeney leading that horror thing would have done a little better, but no. Arthur the King had a good hold with 4.2 million this time.
It's pretty decent. Pretty decent. Klaus de Risk, which is a 2024 remake. Release?
Yeah.
You can't do it to me, man. You asshole.
It wasn't intentional. I tried to save you. I was like, that's not right.
I'm not even going to cut this out. They're going to hear all this. He wrote 2024 remake on our script. And as I go to read it, he changes it to release. He retypes it. You schmuck.
To be fair, I had deleted remake before you said it. So I was trying to get it in there, the release part. But yeah, I was looking up what this was. A 1960 film that had a 2024 re-release and somehow made 3.4 million, which again, like Luca, Turning Red, all these things like are coming out, being re-released in theaters since they weren't during the pandemic. Those aren't even on the list, as you're going to see. And this one, a 1960, again, French film coming out of nowhere, getting 3.4 million. That's crazy. I don't know if there's some like shenanigans there. I never heard of this or seen this before. So
yeah, that's interesting.
Props anyway, to them, yeah. I guess, for that and all the fans.
3.4 million. A 2024 re-release of a 1960 movie. You dick.
I tried to get it in there, man. I'm sorry.
Anyway, go ahead. Keep going.
Late Night with the Devil. 2.8 million.
That's a movie I want to see. I watched the trailer. It looks interesting. I've heard good things. I kind of want to go see it.
Well,
I might go see it this weekend.
They used AI. So you're supporting
in a poster,
AI.
Didn't they? Wasn't it just a poster?
No, I think it's like the interstitial like title cards or whatever it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, if you want to go and support the people that would do that.
Yeah, I'm still going
to. But not a lot of people ended up seeing it at all. Only 2.8 million. And then Imaginary with 2.7 million. So a lot of these like horror films coming out, but
not doing good. Not doing as good as usual. Usually a horror movie will clean up this time of year, at least make 15, 16 million in a debut, you know?
Yeah.
That's pretty good for this time of year for a low-budget horror movie. But no, they're dead in the water, apparently. Nobody wants to watch
horror movies. Blockbuster season right now. So
yeah, they're coming out a little earlier this year. Dune 2 is claiming a lot. Kung Fu Panda 4, Ghostbusters, Deadpool's coming out soon. They're cleaning up. Godzilla and Kong next week, you know? I guess so. After Imaginary was Love Lies Bleeding with 1.5 million.
And Cabrini running out the top 10 with 1.4 million. Let's go to the predictions for this upcoming weekend, March 29th, 28th to March 30th, Easter weekend. Godzilla and Kong, The New Empire is coming out. Of course, this film is on my roster. So busy March, having three films total from our roster coming out.
Mm-hmm.
This, let's look at some comparisons with the previous films. 2014's Godzilla made a smash with 93 million.
That's incredible.
It is. Kong, Skull Island in 2017, 61 million. It's a little bit of a step down. Godzilla, King of Monsters in 2018 had 47 million.
Quite a step down.
Big step down. And then in the pandemic, Godzilla versus Kong, 31 million. Although that was, again, that was March.
That was pandemic numbers.
2021. Yeah. Again, different films you can say saved the theaters. I think it goes to Godzilla versus Kong. That was the first big blockbuster that came out in 2021.
I remember that, yeah.
It did well. Again, 31 million, went on to make over 100 million domestic.
Godzilla versus Kong walked so that Top Gun Maverick could run.
Indeed. I think No Way Home later in 2021 was probably the next bigger one that saved the theaters.
I suppose.
What do we think Godzilla and Kong the New Empire will do? I'm looking back at it. I did not realize that every single film in this MonsterVerse had fallen from the one before it. Of course, the asterisk on Godzilla versus Kong, but
yeah,
it's been a step down. I think that's going to change this time.
I think I'm going to throw it to 45 million.
What? You still think it's going to go below King of Monsters?
I think so, yeah.
Even though Kong is in this?
Yeah.
If in the pandemic, no way. In the pandemic, Godzilla versus Kong made 31 million. You think in the 3 years since it only makes less than 16 million more?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Sorry, buddy. I'm saying 70 million.
70 is crazy.
I think it'll probably be some.
I think I'm on the low end. I think you're on the very high end. I think it'll be somewhere in the middle.
We'll see. I think the people yearn for the big.
They yearn
big
for
kaiju the fighting monkey. Each other. Yeah, the monkey and the lizard.
Yep.
So we shall see. But indeed. I'm hoping again. It's on my roster. It needs to match or exceed Dune Part 2. We will see if it's able to accomplish that, because Dune Part 2 is doing extremely well. So hopefully Godzilla and Kong can join the sandworms and overperform.
Mm-hmm. Now we can move on to our March grab bag, which is a little bit of a disappointing grab bag, because I did not have a lot of opportunities to watch new things. To keep you all updated with my life, I have moved this past month to a new place, and in the course of doing so, it took a week to pack things up and move things over, and then the week after already moving in, took another week just to get Wi-Fi. So it's 2 weeks out of the month where I could not watch anything except for my old DVDs, which I have plenty of, but there was no way to connect any streaming services or anything like that, so all I had were books and DVDs. And on top of that, there wasn't much in the theaters except for Dune 2, which I've already seen and we've already talked about. So there's, coming into this grab bag, not a lot for me to hit upon, except for Dune 2, which we've already talked about, and the new Avatar show, which we've also already talked about. But in that week where I didn't have Wi-Fi and I was living in my new place, I went through and I watched a bunch of old DVDs that I had. And so we are going to be talking about those for my picks. But let's start with Ryan, who did have Wi-Fi and did have time. What did you watch this past month, Ryan?
So this was an interesting month because mainly instead of the big releases in theaters or on streaming services, it was the shows. It was television that I thought had the much bigger hype, bigger releases. So that was mainly what I wanted to look at and talk about. Just watch like the pilots of a few different shows that I had my eye on. Just compare them and see which one came out on top. But I did catch some films. I do want to ask, though, so you never ended up seeing Spaceman?
I didn't have time, and I also forgot about it until right now. It's been a very busy month for me.
What a big letdown of all the times we mentioned Spaceman, that you brought up Spaceman over the past few episodes.
I know.
Now, we may never know your thoughts, unless it pops up on the top 10 at the end of the year, but
I doubt it.
We shall see. I went to go see this film called Snack Shack. Have you heard of this?
Never.
This was, I don't know what was going on, but this was being like targeted to me through like the Regal app.
Really?
And then on like YouTube and stuff like that, like the targeted ads were hidden.
You're the targeted audience for Snack Shack.
Apparently. And it is, it's a coming of age film. So they're solid on that part at least. It's a comedy about two best friends in, I don't know, Midwest or in like Nebraska or something like that. And it's in the 90s, and they need to scrounge up some money over the summer. So they open up a Snack Shack by a pool. And that's the whole thing, is them doing that, trying to make it work successfully. A girl comes into town. They each obviously have eyes for her. So then that like creates a rift. So just some classic, you know, coming of age storytelling stuff. It's
classic.
Decent. Like them hanging out by the pool and just that whole vibes, like the summer vibes of it, were coming through really strong. Like, it made me want to just chill out, enjoy the summer season. So that part of it worked successfully. And again, most of it is like fine. Like, it's decent. It also has Gabriel LaBelle, who was the kid in Fablemans. So he's in this. And he is great. I think he definitely is going to become a star. And then there's some other kid I don't recognize as the other guy, but he was like the main character. So that I was a little disappointed by, that it wasn't Gabriel LaBelle as the main character. But yeah, the two of them had pretty good chemistry. There were some good moments and good gags in there. But this falls victim to the same thing as Stranger Things and what we were talking about earlier with the Avatar thing, of the characters in this are supposed to be 14 years old, like recently graduating middle school. And it's people that look, I mean, they're like our age pretty much. Like, Gabriel LaBelle, since The Fablemans, has bulked up. So
really,
like, and it's a summer thing too. So like, all they're doing is wearing like muscle tees and stuff like that. So the kid is like jacked, walking around being like, oh, I'm 14. It's like the most ridiculous thing ever. I don't know why they didn't just age them up to be like 17 or something like that, and just have it be the summer before they graduate or whatever, or before their senior year. That made no sense. And then there are a lot of issues here and there. The romance that they had specifically, it was one of those where you never actually buy into the fact that these people like each other, mm-hmm. other than for the fact that they just think the other one is hot. Like, that's mm-hmm. all it is. The girl that comes in, and what sucks is they almost give her like different character traits. Like, she has a hobby of photography, and so that could have been something to make her feel more three-dimensional. But instead, mm-hmm. it's just he's enamored with her because she's hot, and they learn nothing about each other. They never have an actual like conversation where they just learn about each other. They literally, there's a scene where they're like walking around the town and they just don't say a word. They don't talk to each other. They just like take little glances at each other. And I'm like, can they learn one thing about each other?
Interesting.
Anything. Why do they like each other other than like the physical appearance? So that part kind of annoyed me. Also, yeah, the like friends here, they needed to brush up on their bro code. Because they were not, like, and when the girl entered the picture, they were not, like, marking boundaries or doing this and this, like, saying, okay, who likes her, who's going to pursue her. They weren't talking about that at all. And then once everything is said and done, they don't, like, truly resolve things. Like, it just sort of ends because something else happens, like a major plot point, and then they just come back together, and then they don't really talk through anything that happened. So it's like, okay.
Guys don't talk, you know? We just feel.
Apparently, I mean, these guys didn't. They just cracked open a couple of cold ones.
They're not boys anymore. They're men.
Yeah. That also, it just felt like the character resolution, at least, of their friends. Because you know going into this, like, okay, there's going to be a rift at some point. But when they come back together, it didn't feel satisfying because it wasn't them, like, working through
the
issues they have with each other. It was just like, okay. Something happened, and then now we're back, and that's it.
What do you rank it out of 5 snack checks?
Homebrewed brewskis. You can just do the name of the thing.
I don't know anything else about the fucking movie.
I know. I don't know why you were taking points on the thing there. We'll say homebrewed brewskis because they do that. That's like one of their gags in the beginning.
They
if the sound in the theater was off or the sound mix from the film was off, but it was very quiet. Like the dialogue track specifically, like when they were, it starts off with them like being very bustling and yelling and stuff like this, cause they're like gambling on horse races, and you're seeing that they're supposed to be shouting, but it was coming through like so quietly. So that was another issue with the whole thing. But that wasn't, well, could have been the film's fault. I don't know. It may have been the theater's fault, but 2.5 homebrewed brewskis. Out of 5.
It's rough. Better than Avatar, though.
Very true. Very, very true. All right, let's hear your first selection of these old films you cracked open from your DVD library.
So not necessarily old films, but to give context, when I moved out of my last place, I was in a temporary location between housing for a while, and I kept most of my items in big boxes because I didn't want to unpack and then have to repack very quickly afterwards. So most of my stuff stayed in boxes, which was depressing because I didn't have access to all my things, you know, it made me sad. But when I moved to this new place, I set up a book stand, or a book stand is the right word, and filled it with all my DVDs that had been stuck in boxes for so long. Mm-hmm. And I had a TV. When we were moving throughout the week. And so we had a TV that was just sitting on the floor. My coffee table from my old bedroom, which is tiny. And then one old little folding chair. So we had this giant living room that had a TV on the floor, a little coffee table, and a chair for me to sit in while we were moving things in. Classic. I think I sent you a Snapchat where it was a picture of that, and it was, guys will see this and say, hell yeah.
Yeah.
It's a giant living room, and it's so funny to see just three tiny little pieces of furniture in there. Mm-hmm. But so what I would do is, because I was staying the night at the place before we had moved most of our stuff in, and because I'm paying the damn money for the place. I want to sleep here, you know, I want to get my money's worth.
Sure.
So plus I had moved everything except my mattress here. So all of my clothes, all of my toiletries, everything except the mattress was in this location. So I was like, I'm going to stay here. And I had Carlos's giant beanbag chair to sleep in one night. So it was fine. I was cracking open the DVDs. I was like, ooh, I could watch anything I want. So every day it was just like, I would get a DVD, I'd put it in and I would stack it up. And so it was stacking up DVDs one by one by one on the coffee table. So I had like 10 of them. But the first thing I watched the first night here was The Royal Tenenbaums by Wes Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God, the movie's so good. Gene Hackman should have won a fucking Oscar for that shit. Incredible. I mean, just the comedy in it that Gene Hackman delivers is just so, so brilliantly funny. Everything that happens is so brilliantly funny. And then it's so terribly depressing at the same time. Have you seen Royal Tenenbaums, right? I can spoil it.
I have not.
Never mind. I won't spoil it.
Remember,
it.
But I'm it not is caught up on all my Wes Andersons.
Like, it is incredible for sure, and the colors are very vibrant compared to his previous films at that time. Everything, it's just like everything that he had done in Bottle Rocket and Rushmore, leading up to World. It was like staging ground for Royal Tenenbaums to make it as good as it is, and so it fires on all cylinders, absolutely, with such a stellar cast as well, and the interweaving of the storylines. It feels so personal and so wonderful. In a way that a lot of his other movies don't feel quite as, like a lot of his earlier work felt more emotional as opposed to post Budapest Hotel kind of content, where French Dispatch was a collection of interesting stories. Asteroid City was supposed to be very introspective. Isle of Dogs, I think, was trying to be emotional. I just don't think it landed mm-hmm. very well, but he just hasn't had like a big emotional hit for me since Budapest Hotel. So to go back and to rewatch Royal Tenenbaums was really great. And then one of the movies I watched later on in the week after some of these other movies I'm going to talk about was Life Aquatic by Steve Zissou, which is, I don't think it's his best movie, but it's one of my favorites just because it feels, it's one of the first movies I had seen as a young adult. Not even adult. What was I, like 15? A very, like a middle teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to get into movies, trying to understand the filmmaking process and watching it and being like, yeah, it's not like a perfect movie. And there are definitely like moments where it might feel boring or might feel sluggish, but it is funny and I like the characters and I like the way it's shot and I like the story itself. I like what it's trying to do with it. And everything feels very, very, very intentional. And so I'm watching it and I'm just enjoying it. And it is just a good movie. It is also, this is one you haven't seen as well, right?
Correct. Well, partially, because I do remember there was one of the movie nights that you tried to do.
We did. Did we not watch all of Steve Zissou?
I don't think we did. I think that was one of the misses where people were not feeling it. And you were like, God dang it.
I hate.
May have changed it to some notes.
Those are my worst moments. Was when I, because we used to do for the audience when in high school, we would do movie nights maybe like once a week, once every.
We
got to
bring them back. By the way, now that
I have a place, come over.
And half the crew is already going to be at that place, so
yeah,
might as well.
Movie nights would be fun. Yeah, God, Those movie nights, some of the best high school memories, man. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we would do them like once a week, once every other week, either at my place or Jacob's place or Lillian's mom's place. And they were fun. It was a good time. I just wish my movies landed more of the times, you know? It felt like the burden was on me to pick a good movie. Because if I didn't pick the movie, we would have watched something on Netflix that was like, okay. And we would have had a good time still. But I wanted movie nights to be something more. I wanted it to be like we are engaging with movies that you haven't seen because, or like the audience has not seen because they are high schoolers who aren't interested in movies that much. And mm-hmm. I am a high schooler who's very interested in movies and I've seen so many and I want to share them with you guys. And I had so many misses. Life Aquatic, apparently, I thought we watched the whole thing, but I guess that was a miss. And then another big miss was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Oof, that was the most tragic one for sure. Big whiff, dude. That one was rough. Because at the time, it was my favorite movie of all time, which has since changed. But at the time, I was in love with that movie. And so I was so excited to share it with you guys. And we got like an hour in, and everybody was like, this sucks. We bored. Move on. Such a big bummer. But to go back and to watch those earlier Wes Anderson, because I haven't seen them in so long, was very, very enjoyable and very fun to do. And I rate them so highly in my heart and in my mind. I think they are fantastic. I do want to go back and watch more. I own everything he's done through Grand Budapest Hotel. I own all those movies, except maybe Darjeeling Limited. I think I skipped that one because I didn't like it that much. So I don't think I own that one. But I own all the other ones. I love watching them. They are fantastic. Like Fantastic Mr. Fox. And one of these days, Alice, bam, zoom, straight to the moon. We gotta sit down. We gotta get you to watch the Wes Andersons and we gotta do a Wes Anderson director analysis.
For sure.
No, please, 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 please.
It's on the docket. We'll hit it up at some point. And with your movie nights, we can hit up one of them at least, either Royal Tenenbaums or Moonrise Kingdom, something like
dude,
that.
Dude, you would That'll love Moonrise pleasure. Kingdom. You would love Moonrise Kingdom.
Hoping so. But yeah, that'll be fun. So we should get that going again.
Absolutely.
And then maybe one day you can try and test the waters with either Life Aquatic or Good, Bad, and the Ugly again. Because everyone now I think is more refined in their palate and their movie tastes. So I think Good, Bad, Ugly might go over better now.
But I think, I don't know if it's about a refinement, because I don't think at the time they were necessarily against it because it was a Western or like, I don't think they were, I think the problem was it is a desire to watch as opposed to like a refined, I think if they had a desire to watch at the time, they would have enjoyed it. I think the problem is we were 17 and they did not want to watch a 3-hour Western, which is not their fault at all. Like I completely understand nowadays why they wouldn't want to do that. It takes a very specific 17-year-old to want to sit down and watch a 3-hour Clint Eastwood Western. Mm-hmm. And they, I'm just that guy and they are not. But I think nowadays they have a stronger desire to watch.
Well, that's what I'm saying when I say, yeah, like refined palette.
But my argument is that I think they still would have liked it at the time had they wanted to watch it. Mm. When I think of like a refined palette taste, I think of someone who's like, ooh, I don't like this because it's a Western. I don't think it's good, blah, 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 blah. Let's change it. I think they just didn't have a desire to watch it. But had they wanted to watch it, them at 17 would have enjoyed the film itself. Because it's a good movie. Who doesn't like it? It's a good movie. It's fantastic. The end, oh my God. I listen to the soundtrack of The Good, the Bad, the Ugly in my car all the time because I just think it's so good.
Well, we'll have to do it at some point. Wah, wah. I mean, it's classic. It's top tier. Beautiful, beautiful rendition.
Thank you.
All right. Are you going to go through all 10 of the films? Is that what you said? You would watch 10 films? That you want to highlight?
I watched a lot of films, but I won't. I will not. We can skip. We can go back to you, and then we'll come back to me later.
Okay. I'll just throw out the other film before I get into the TV stuff. I watched Ricky Stenicki. You heard this?
I did hear about Ricky Stenicki. Yeah,
it's a with Zac Efron and John Cena. Yeah, it's about like these three friends that come up with a fake friends that they just blame everything on all their troubles and issues, and it becomes a lifelong thing. And so as adults now, married, not with kids, one is like married to someone that is about to give birth, and then early in the film does give birth, they use Ricky Stanicky, that fake friend, as a way to get out of situations they don't want to be in, either at work or at home, and so that they can go
the worst fucking name you could
stuff that they want to do. Yeah, they pick Ricky Stanicky,
the most obviously fake name.
They show the creation of it, which is like the one kid tried to say like the last name of one of the other kids, and he was like, dude, like that's my name, why would we do that? So then they change it at like last second because he was writing Stan, which is part of the name, and then he put Icky on there, so it became Ricky Stanicky. And it's decent. Again, it's too long for like the comedy that it's
how long is
trying
it
to be. It's like 2 hours and 10-15 minutes, something like that.
Damn,
this should have been
crazy. It should have been like an hour and a half. Minutes. Yeah.
So I actually don't know what the exact runtime is, but that's how long it felt. So if it was longer than that, then that's rough too. But it wasn't 90 minutes.
Let's find out. I'm gonna look it up.
And so it has good bits in there. Like there was.
It's an hour and 53, bro. That's a normal amount of time for a comedy.
It felt longer, so they should have made it 90. It needed to be a tight 90. And then, it was just John Cena. The man will commit to a bit, as we've seen at the Oscars. So that was great. Again, he has like good physical comedy, good timing, good presence. I've obviously been a big fan for the longest time, but seeing him like work more in these like over the top comedic roles, he does it really well. So that was good. The Ginger, Andrew Santino.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
He's pretty funny. The character is so despicable. It's like, he's just such a dick to everyone. And again, the whole thing is like, he misses the birth of his child because they lie that Ricky Stanicky had cancer, like his cancer came back, testicular cancer, of course. And so they have to leave to go and visit Ricky. And as they do that, she gives birth like a few weeks early, but still he misses the birth of the baby. And so, yeah, he's just a dick. But the actor there has really good timing. It's pretty funny. So there's like decent gags and stuff throughout. It's a pretty good premise. But overall, again, it was too long. Again, it felt very, very long. I didn't even watch it all in one go, too. I like split it up. And so that was a little bit rough. And then, yeah, the actual emotional investment in the characters themselves was not there. So they did try and play up because it's Peter Farrelly.
I was just looking that up. I was about to say, can you believe that this movie was made by 2-time Academy Award winner Peter Farrelly?
Yeah. And so he tries to like go into the more sappy, like sentimental stuff, which again, with like a premise like this, I'm like, no, like just stick with the hijinks. So that I didn't think really worked, but overall I'll give it 2.5 Jizz Jams.
Oh,
named in honor of,
same
old bit of like Ricky's the Nicky, like the actual guy that John Cena's playing, whose name is like Rod something. And also like a really fake name. I don't know if they ever explained if that was his real name or his stage name, but he just sings like very naughty covers of old like 80s, 90s classics.
Sure.
So, and that was a fun montage. Again, John Cena, he'll just go for it, which is great to see. But yeah. I mean, it was something I turned on because it was during like a stressful part of the week, and I'm like, I don't want to think too hard. I just want to see something stupid. So I put that on and it worked. So yeah, but 2.5 out of 5 for that one. Let's go back to you.
So it's funny that we were talking about Westerns earlier, because one of the things that I watched in this period of time was the Dollars trilogy, which this was after I got Wi-Fi. I did have Wi-Fi, and I had been watching movies all week. And because I had been watching movies all week, I just wanted to keep watching movies once I got Wi-Fi, even though there were other, like I could have watched Shogun or I could have watched Avatar. I was like, I've been watching, wouldn't spend a stray week watching movies. I guess I could just keep doing it, you know, in between going and trying to make money and things like that.
Right.
And So one of the movies I watched when I didn't have Wi-Fi was Once Upon a Time in America. No, Once Upon a Time in the West, sorry. Which is a Sergio Leone Western with Charles Bronson and I'm blanking. Other people. But Charles Bronson's the main character. And it's great. It's a great Western. It has some plot holes to it that I thought were a little poorly done upon rewatching the movie as an older man. But overall, the filmmaking of it is awesome. It has great, great twists and turns, really great reveals, fantastic music, things like that. Like the filmmaking itself was enjoyable. So I watched that and I was like, once I got Wi-Fi, I was like, I could do some more Westerns. And I had never seen the first two movies of the Dollars trilogy, which is A Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm saying them, I'm realizing I don't remember which is which.
It's funny.
I think...
You would think A Few More Dollars would be a sequel.
They're not sequels to one another, no. They are... it's Clint Eastwood, and he's playing a similar character in both movies, but legally distinct from one another.
Sequels? Or is no, it like they one are, of those things like technically they're not the same, but they are the same?
It's Clint Eastwood and he's dressed the exact same. But he's playing two distinct characters because legally the second movie was made with a different studio than the first movie. So legally he is not the same character as the first movie. However, he is dressed the exact same and acts the exact same and does the exact same things that the other character would do. But
they change his name? Did they just
reverse the
letters of like his first and last name or something?
He does play a different character technically. But they're like the Dollars trilogy is spiritual sequels in the same sense that the Cornetto trilogy are spiritual sequels to one another. Like they're different stories, but it's the same filmmaker, same actors, same crew, things like that. Right. That's essentially what's going on with the Dollars trilogy. So I watched those and I was fortunate to find that successively they get better as they go along, which is great. So I watched the first one that came out chronologically, which I think was A Fistful of Dollars.
I believe so.
It's the one where they shot for shot adapted Yojimbo. They shot for shot adapted Akira Kurosawa's Yojimbo, which I have also seen. And I thought it was good, but I think Yojimbo just does it so much better. So much better. It just feels more epic. It feels more realistic. It feels awesome. And like they do a couple of things differently in A Fistful of Dollars, but it's not nearly as awesome. My problem is this is like Sergio Leone's first film. He's on a lower budget. Clint Eastwood's not as big a star at the time. It just doesn't land as hard as the next ones do because you get to, for A Few Dollars More, all of a sudden, because Fistful of Dollars was so popular in bringing that story to Western audiences, he gets a bigger budget. He gets a more original story. He gets bigger actors. He gets Lee Van Cleef and all kinds of other people. And so all of a sudden, the filmmaking quality of it jumps drastically. It all of a sudden is shot significantly better. The audio syncing is a lot better because in all these spaghetti westerns, it's just ADR, straight ADR for everything. Every single line of dialogue is ADR, which is a little hard to follow when it's done poorly. But when it's done decently enough, it's fine. So you're just watching that and it's like you're thinking, wow, they really stepped up their game. But I feel like the story itself is not as good as the story for A Fistful of Dollars because that's just a straight Akira Kurosawa story that they're stealing line for line. And so it's fantastic. But for A Few Dollars More, it's its own original story and it's filmed a lot better. But I didn't like the story as much, right. Although it has parts to it. The thing is, they weave in the storyline for Lee Van Cleef's character to be seeking vengeance upon the villain of the story for doing a wrong to him that we learn as the story's going on, which is a similar thing in Once Upon a Time in the West, but they don't build up that tension between the two characters enough to the point where when you find out that Lee Van Cleef is seeking his revenge upon him, it is almost a twist of sorts because you didn't know that's what it was in the first place, which is kind of stupid. It's like, you build it in better. Right. In Once Upon a Time in the West, we start with Charles Bronson, and he's like, I am looking for this guy, Frank. Where is he? Like, he spends the whole movie just trying to find Frank because he wants to kill him, and you don't know why. And the twist is you find out why towards the end of the movie, which is great. Great, great, great storytelling. Mm-hmm. But in this one, you don't know he's chasing after this guy until it's too late. And then you find out you find out at the same time that he is chasing him, why he's chasing him. And it's like, it's done okay, you know.
Gotcha.
But then the third movie in the Dollars trilogy is The Good and the Bad and the Ugly, which we were just talking about it. We talked about it extensively personally and in on the show. I'm sure I've brought it many times, but talk about taking the filmmaking to a new level, dude. Holy shit, that movie is so awesome. It is so, so fantastic. And I forgot it was, too, because it was my favorite movie for a long time. And then it fell off because we had that movie night, and I was like, maybe it is kind of slow. It is 3 hours. It is a Western. I watched more movies growing up.
It got you thinking. You're like, maybe it's not what it used to be.
It did. And then I watched more movies. I separated myself from it a little more. I watched Once Upon a Time in America, which is another Sergio Leone movie that isn't a Western. I thought that movie was fantastic. I've seen many other movies since then. Goodfellas is still at the top, of course. But, God, every time I watch The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, it's just so vividly entertaining. It is so fantastic. Oh, my God. Yeah, you haven't seen it all the way through.
That's what I was going to ask. Where did it end up ranking now? Like, did you have to bump it up a few spots on this rewatch?
I have not bumped it up. I think I'm going to keep it where it is because I think it's an honest placement as to where it is on the list. I can pull it up really quick because it shouldn't take that long to pull up my favorite movies list. It is currently ranked 43, which is low.
It's a steep drop from what was once.
But I would argue that every movie that is above it is accurately a movie I like more.
Okay. Well, yeah.
For sure.
That's good.
So I would say that it's accurate in its placement. But, I mean, I've seen so many movies. 43 is still pretty damn good.
Still top 50.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good.
So there you go. Nice.
All right. Yeah, these movies are so good. I'm looking at my list. God, what hits, bro? What bangers? I have such good taste.
You change it quite frequently, though. I see.
Yeah, the last time I updated your initial list was in February.
In February, yeah. But your initial list is like quite different from where it's at now.
It's changed quite a bit because I've seen a lot more movies and I've rewatched. The thing is, when I made the list, I made it in like 2020 is when I started it, and at that point I had seen so many movies that I couldn't possibly remember all of the ones that I wanted to include, so it's been a bit of catch up with the movies that go on there. I will rewatch a movie I saw when I was like 13 or 14 that I loved, and then I'll realize that I loved it and I will add it in afterward, even though I had already seen it and I'd already loved it. I just forgot why I loved it or how much I loved it, and then I'll add it in afterward. Like one of the ones I added relatively recently was The Lives of Others, which is a German film from 2005-ish, a movie that I'd seen a long, long time ago that I forgot I really liked. And then I went, oh, this movie's fantastic, and I love this movie, and it's incredible. Mm-hmm. Let me add it in. Dog Day Afternoon, same thing. The SpongeBob SquarePants movie. There's plenty of movies that like I will rewatch, and I'll go, oh, this is great. Like Die Hard used to be. Die Hard was number one for a little bit, and then it was like number one for like a month because I watched it and I was like, dude, Die Hard is the best movie. Die Hard is the greatest. It is the peak of filmmaking, and I still think it's fantastic, but now it's like 46 on the list. Oh. I thought Midnight in Paris, when I first watched it when I was 12 or whenever it came out, was my favorite movie for a year because I thought it was fantastic, and it still is. It's 49 now. They go down.
Wow.
You know?
Best thing.
But Goodfellas, stay strong. Goodfellas number one.
The reigning.
Dude, it is hard to beat Goodfellas. Wings of Desire came close. I watched Wings of Desire and is now number six.
Number six. Yeah. Yes. We'll be talking about that sometime in the near future. But yeah, someone I know absolutely loves that movie. And so that put it on my radar. And now you're talking so highly of it. I'll definitely have to give it a watch.
Who is it that liked Wings of Desire?
No one, you know. Just someone that I had worked with. But yeah, it was something that ascended on my watch list. And soon, I mean, yeah, within the next few months, I'll definitely have to give it a watch and we can talk about it on the pod. But do you think Goodfellas will ever get dethroned?
It's hard to say. The closest I've come in a long, long time was Wings of Desire. I was watching and I was like, this is incredible. This could, because of the place I was at when I was watching it and how I was feeling watching it and the effect it's had on me since watching it, I was like, this could take number one spot. And so I watched it and I was adding it to the list and I rewatched it and I was just trying to think about where I would put it. And I don't think it'll get that high because the closest I've come is Wings of Desire. And then in 2019, Parasite coming out, because Parasite was just like, holy shit. Sure, I do remember that. That was when I was making the list, was trying to figure out where Parasite would go in relation to the other movies. And it's third, dude. Parasite, third favorite movie. That is close to usurping.
Yeah. So we'll see.
But I don't know. I mean, Goodfellas and the Star Wars A New Hope, those are like, I see it. I'll see my list and I'll know that Goodfellas is great. But then I'll think Star Wars, I'll be like, why do I have Star Wars so high? And then every time I go and rewatch it, because I'll rewatch Star Wars when I'm sick or when I'm feeling bad. You know, every time I go to rewatch Star Wars, I'm like, dude, it's just so fucking good. It's like, it's not even like I'm romanticizing it in my head. It just is good.
Amen to that. Yes, sir. All right. So yeah, we'll see how that list continues to develop. But yeah, it'll be tough. I feel like, because it's been your number one for so long, it's hard to be like, that just, it sits there. You love it so much. It's hard for something new to come in and just like take over that. I love
Goodfellas.
Because you have such a strong relationship with it.
I think it's because I watched it when I was so young. I watched it when I was like 12 for the first time, you know? And a movie that quality and that exciting and exhilarating of that caliber, watched at such a young age, just imprints so much information upon me as to who I want to be as a filmmaker, who I want to be as a storyteller. I think it's just so awesome.
Right. Nice. All right, let's head back to some stuff from March. Well, I think this one came out.
Hit me with the TV shows. Yeah.
So The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live. That one is the return of Andrew Lincoln as Rick and Danai Gurira as Michonne. So it's one of the many spinoffs of The Walking Dead stuff that they've been doing lately. And so I was like, I'm in it. Rick is going to bring me back. Because literally, season 9 is when he left the show, and it was early season 9, and this was pre-pandemic, and I watched through the rest of season 9, but then I fell off, also because it was just very confusing during the pandemic, and they like bloated the season, so it was tough to like keep track of all that. And then the other spinoffs, like Daryl Dixon got one, and these other, there's one.
Isn't he in Paris or something?
Yes, which is crazy.
It's bizarre.
Don't know how they like ended up explaining that, but those were all boat. Mildly intriguing, but Rick was the one that I had to come back for. So I was so excited to watch it. And let me just say, they had such an amazing opportunity here because it's been 5 years since we've seen
Rick. He died 5 years ago in the show?
It's been 2019 is like when it was season 9. And so he's been gone so long. And this was their time to like bring him back and reintroduce it. And again, there's been a 6-year time skip in the show. Like he leaves and then they do a 6-year time skip. So
does he blow up on a bridge?
Yes. So but
he's technically not dead, I suppose.
No. Well, so the whole thing, spoilers for Walking Dead for everyone, but he, they do that whole thing where he blows up a bridge to save everyone. And then it's assumed that he's dead, but a character who's been in the show for a bit, who's like very weird and like has some connections to something. She calls in a helicopter and we don't know who these people are that like have a helicopter, but she calls it in and they pick up Rick and then they leave and that's like it. So that was his like exit to the show. And then in this one, I think there's another spinoff show too, where they try and explain more of like who these people are with the helicopter. They're called the CRM. So it's just basically some big military. What was it in The Last of Us? Who was the like leader of those compounds? Not the Fireflies, but the other one that they start in. You remember
the organization there? Like the government organization?
Yeah.
I forget what they're called.
Yeah, no, Fedra or something? I don't know.
Fedra. But, you're right, Fedra.
Yeah, it's like something like that where it's like they have an established military and they're like running this big city that they're at. But anyway, so it starts on this. So they could have done something so cool, which is just let us like restart basically with Rick, like a whole new thing. And again, they have it because he's heavily injured, right? The Walking Dead original show starts with him waking up in a hospital bed from a coma. They could have done that here where he wakes up from his injuries in a hospital bed in the city that he doesn't recognize, and essentially the same way of him having to discover what's going on. We could just do that and like have him explore this world. Instead, they do the tell, don't show rule. So now we have him, and again, all of The Walking Dead, like there's never monologuing. We don't have the voiceover. But this one, it's him doing a voiceover explaining what has happened in the past 6 years. So they do this 6 year time skip. So we don't even get to see him like wake up and adjust and do all this. We skip over 6 years of him being gone, essentially trapped by the CRM, unable to get back to his family. And I don't understand why they did it. There's also some other scenes too, which are just so like silly exposition. Like some dude comes up and sits next to him on a bench and is like, wow, you're not really a happy guy, Rick, huh? Well, I guess this is the end, because I've served my 6 year sentence and now I'm going to go into the city and live out as a civilian because I've done my duty as one of the prisoners. Like someone just comes up and says that, and it's like, they would have known this. Why is he explaining it to Rick? As if he also hasn't been here for 6 years. Here's the most egregious thing, though, Dylan. Mm-hmm. The show starts with Rick, and this is a big spoiler for it, but...
Just go ahead. I'm never going
to
watch
it. They do it in the first, like, 2 minutes. They have Rick as a way of trying to leave, right? They escape. They're doing something where they're, like, killing walkers and whatnot, and the way that they keep them all chained down basically is they, like, have their hands handcuffed to something, one of the like guards basically. Mm-hmm. They have the prisoners out there like killing the walkers, and then they're chained to the guards. So how he tries to escape is he cuts off his hand with a hatchet.
What the hell?
He like cuts off his hand and then starts running. And this is a thing because like in the comics he loses his hand, so they're like finally trying to do that. So he starts running away and then fails, like he gets captured. So then he's brought back. And now they have to give him like a new like prosthetic thing that has a blade on it, of course.
But why would they give a prisoner a blade hand? The face you just made.
That's the whole thing too. This first episode is one dude.
This is not a visual medium, Ryan. You can't just make a face.
One guy is like consistently trying to get Rick to like join the military for some reason. And he like puts up with, again, he's tried to escape like 4 or 5 times, something like that. And now he's cut off his own hand. But they still won't kill him, and they keep trying to leave him as prisoner for his own ulterior motives, which they get into. But the thing that you need to know is the guy on the bench that comes up and like does a little exposition dump, He also says, wow, Rick, you keep trying to run so much. I don't know why you just don't, you know, join the military. Surely you'd have a better way of getting out if you're on the inside. And then we do a slow push in on Rick. As he realizes, oh, if I join the military, I'll be able to be sent out on missions. You're telling me for 6 years, he's been trying to escape. And some dude, a high up in the military, has been trying to get him to join the military for at least multiple years. And Rick never once thought, maybe it'd be easier to escape if I were part of the military and being sent out on missions. That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. They had this man cut off his own hand before he thought, I can join the military and be sent out in the field and find a way to escape then. That's just so stupid. So silly.
That's so funny.
Also, the whole show is trying to be built around like the reunion of Rick and Michonne, mm-hmm. who they're now a couple. They're like, why, you know, husband and wife now.
Yeah.
So they've been gone for 6 years. The whole thing is like Rick being able to reunite with Michonne.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think that's like the most important scene of the show is when they reunite and see each other for the first time. Because it's been 5 years in real life since we've seen them together. It's been over 6 years for them. Instead of saving like the actors being in the frame together for the first time for when they actually reunite, we get these weird cutaways to like an imaginary present. If there was no apocalypse, where it's like the Michonne character, if she were just a character, and then Rick, if he was just around in the world, like normal contemporary life, and then they're just meeting on a bench and chatting it up as if it's like a normal day. So that is when we see their reunion, is this imaginary fake created like dream basically that Rick is having of them living normal lives and finding each other. It's so stupid. Why wouldn't you save the big reunion for when they actually reunite?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would they? They had such a good opportunity here to create such an amazing reunion, to give a new like spin on Rick's character, like take him back to basics and treat him like a new character in a way, like where he has all this incredible backstory, like 9 seasons worth. But then we just bake that into his character, but we start it like as he's going through a new adventure. Nope, they just try and zip past that as quick as possible. Very frustrating. Second episode, yeah. I did watch as well. It was a little bit better, like focused on Michonne's thing, like her trying to get to him. But, and I'll watch the rest of it just because my boy Rick, I love that guy. He's amazing.
I mean, so, I'm looking at IMDb, the ratings are pretty high.
Yeah, which that I don't understand. Like, truly, I was watching, I'm like, this is not good. Again, the second episode was a step up, so maybe it gets better and better. But they had such a better opportunity to like get us into this world and reconnect us with these characters, but
yeah,
they chose not to, just to like speed run back to them getting together, I guess.
Yeah,
so that was a shame. I also watched Three Body Problem, which are you
tell me about that.
Gonna watch this at all,
do you think? I'm probably not gonna watch it, but I'm aware of what it is, and I know that it's Lillian's favorite book.
Yeah, it's this big like sci-fi book, part of a trilogy from a Chinese author, and it's really well regarded. So I was intrigued by it. So I wanted to watch the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Just so we don't spend too much time in it, I will say, as far as the characters, like I don't really have any connection with them yet.
Bummer.
Because it's a pretty big, it's an ensemble. And it's also, there's like 2 separate timelines at the moment. So there's someone back in like, I don't know the exact time, but like when China was going through the revolution and she's like daughter of a counter-revolutionary that gets hanged and whatnot. So it's like her back in the 60s or 70s. And then it's the current timeline. So that was a little rough, like back and bouncing back and forth and not being able to connect enough with like just one of those characters, or sets of characters. But I will say, as far as the like mystery and the intrigue of what is happening here and what is all these weird things that are happening, because it's, there's all these scientists are dying, seemingly like committing suicide, killing themselves. And all these like particle accelerators or things like that all around the world are not working properly. Like they're saying like, oh, science is broken. Like physics is broken. No one knows what's happening. And all these scientists are killing themselves. So something's going on. And so the way that they build in that mystery is really cool. And then they have a set piece at like the very end, which I've never seen before. And it was extremely cool to see. Like the concept of it is amazing, but then the actual execution could have been goofy, but it did hit in that, like, imagine seeing this, like this would be the craziest thing. It'd be terrifying. Like the way they're able to pull that off.
You can tell me if you want to spoil it.
I will not, because I think you should see it just because it's all a right. great set piece. And because at some point, if you do end up watching it, I want to preserve that. But they got me as far as the mystery.
So you're intrigued in watching more
things. Yeah, so I'm not connected with the characters at this moment, but I want to be like, what's going on there? So yeah, it was decent enough, I think, but it's mainly the mystery is what's going to propel me to continue watching if I do. And then Shogun
on Hulu.
This one has it, bro.
Really?
This one got the crown. Yes. It's so good. Like from the first shot, which is like this haggard ship looking like a ghost ship emerging through the fog, the production value immediately is fantastic. Amazing. Again, these are all, well, Walking Dead, no. But comparing back to like Avatar, like all these big shows, massive blockbuster shows that have come out recently. I mean, Shogun is the one that feels the most real and grounded. Like you can tell how much effort they put into.
Yeah.
Like all the set pieces, the costuming, all of that. Then also the cinematography is on another level. But then this one, it's also like sort of an ensemble thing, but I was caring about the characters.
Okay.
And I can already see like sort of some of the arcs that they might be going or the way that they're setting up interesting things. Like in Three Body Problem, didn't really have any of that. But this one, there's so much intrigue that they've already baked into it. And you know. I mean, go back to Game of Thrones, like the early seasons of that, the political intrigue was like the main stuff there. this one has it. And it's that because we talked about Silence, you know, recently in our Martin Scorsese, one of our director analysis there. So this is like the period right before that, like leading up to it, that big tumultuous time where they're like all at war basically. So this is building into that. And we have the like outsiders, like they have an English pilot like coming in who's trying to establish new ports of trade with Japan because the Portuguese have for the longest time like hidden it. And so they're coming in. You see the guy that, because the current ruler is technically like a child. So he's like the heir, but he's not old enough to, he hasn't come of age yet. So he can't technically be in control. So they have a council and one of the people on the council is like trying to take over. So we see his politicking. You see one of his generals is also sort of like politicking because he had found the ship, but he wanted to keep it because there were like cannons in there and other things that he wanted to sell out for himself, basically. So you see he's already maybe not got the best allegiances to his lord. You've got, there's this one, the way they play with like the religion too and like the just the different things. There's this one Spaniard who works for the Portuguese, but he's able to speak English. So he talks with like the English guy that's arrived. But obviously because it's like Spanish and English, they're not best of friends. You have the different, like Christianity, of course, is in there during that time. So you have some of the Christians that have their certain allegiances, but there's the Protestants and the Catholics as well, because the English guy coming in is not Catholic. So they just have all these different like divisions and people already, you can see the chess pieces being organized in a very compelling fashion. Also, the show is brutal. They want to let you know, like, this is your like real life version of Game of Thrones without all the fantasy aspects. There were three times, I think, in the episode that I said, oh my God. Like, I literally said out loud, oh my God. There's some seppuku thing that they do, which they don't show anything, but the implication there is insane. Like, an awful thing to see. They have some dude get boiled alive as a, like, torture method. One of the dudes, one of the, like, general guys is like, yeah, let's do it in my favorite way, because he's, like, running experiments, basically, on people in their, like, last moments of death, but he needs to, like, boil him for a full 12 hours or something to get him there.
Jesus Christ.
The shot they show of that, because they do it very judiciously, of, like, we don't see him often. We just hear everyone else in the village, like, are able to hear his screams throughout the night, which is terrifying. But they do one shot of showing you what he looks like towards the end. Insane. And then there's this other moment where some dude got his like head hacked off out of nowhere. And it like crazy, crazy moments. And so that, I
definitely gotta watch show.
That was great. And there were set pieces too, where I was already immediately invested. There's like some, there's a, when they're on the seas, a storm comes through and that gets pretty dicey. There's a rescue that they have to do of like down scaling a cliff, basically. That was incredible. There's a scene again of like someone holding a knife to someone's throat and someone has to come in and talk her down. But you see the way that she has to like talk her down is terrible. And then the moment that we have with her alone, the one that like had to talk her down, she has to go separately and it's like praying to God, basically asking for like forgiveness or guidance in some way. Cause again, the implication there is so devastating. So it's a brutal show. They let you know that early on up front. A lot of compelling character motivations and people on different sides and setting up alliances and connections that I think are going to play out really interestingly over the course of the season. It is definitely the one that I'm 100% going to continue. I'll probably watch all of them, to be honest, but Shogun is the one that I'm like, okay, we're locked in and could take the crown for like best show of this whole year. Like, I don't know what else is coming out later on. We'll have to see, but this one could be the overall winner. And I'd imagine too, like, yeah, Emmys and stuff like that, be on the lookout. This one I think is going to clean up.
Yeah, I can see that. That's one episode. There's a whole now that Succession's over and Ted Lasso's over and Barry's over. There's a little bit of a hole in television right now.
There sure is.
For the big winner. So Shogun could take it pretty easy. It's a good time for it to come out.
It is.
I will watch it. I will definitely watch it.
I think you should give it a shot. Again, that's on one episode, but at least I'm hooked. So we'll see how it goes. Hopefully the quality will maintain and only increase as we get deeper and deeper into what's going on there.
That's awesome.
But yeah.
All right. That is all the time we have. If you'd like to give your thoughts on the show, you can email us at theboxofficeshowpod@gmail.com.
Our main title theme for the show is Sundown by Joseph McDade.
If you like the show, please give us 5 stars whatever podcast app you're listening to, and be sure to tune in next week. Have a great rest of your day.